Welcome to the big interview brought to you by Beyond the Ballot Box on CFIU 93.3 FM. I'm Jan Hall. The big interview takes place every Thursday from 6 till 6:30 PM on CFIU 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also find us online at beyondtheballotbox.ca, on Facebook at Beyond the Ballot Box, and on Twitter at Gang of 4933. We're also now on iTunes at Beyond the Ballot Box. On this episode, we're pleased to welcome to the show Rob Shirky from One Horizon, a registered not-profit lobbying municipalities to put climate change warning labels on gas pump nozzles. It's now my great pleasure to welcome to the big interview tonight Rob Shirky. How are you doing today, Rob?
Jan, thank you very much for having me on your program. I'm doing very well. And just for your listeners, it's Our Horizon, O-U-R Horizon, ourhorizon.org is the website.
That's great. Oh, that's wonderful that you shared that with us. We've been having a crazy day in Guelph today. So
hey, no problem.
It's great to talk to you. Now, I'm going to let you kick off this interview first by getting you to talk a little bit about Our Horizon and the idea that you had that I think really brings the whole issue of climate change home to everybody. And I want to kick things off that way, give you a chance to talk a little bit about why Our Horizon exists and what you are trying to get the municipalities to do.
Yeah, so the first answer, I guess, to your question, why Our Horizon exists, it's to address the issue of climate change. So we've basically, just in the last few generations, we've been digging and drilling for fossil fuels that have been locked under the earth for a very long time, millions of years, in fact, and we've been burning them in our cars, in our homes, in our factories and power plants, and all those emissions have to go somewhere. So in that respect, climate change is a bit of a no-brainer, and they actually have. They've been entering our atmosphere. Carbon concentrations are incredibly high relative to historic rates. And even they've been absorbed by our oceans. So our oceans, since the Industrial Revolution, are actually now about 30% more acidic. So, you know, the science is certainly there. The science is conclusive, and scientists say that, you know, our use of fossil fuels is indeed causing climate change. But for me, it's a bit of a no-brainer. I mean, where else do we think these emissions will go? So that's the why of Our Horizon. We need to address this problem of climate change. And to do that, part of it is transitioning off of fossil fuels and embracing more sustainable forms of energy and then using fossil fuels in more conservative, reasonable ways. So that's the beginning point for Our Horizon. What we've sort of devised is a simple tool to help nudge us in that direction. So much in the same way that we have, say, warning labels on cigarette packages. So here we all are free to smoke today, but the government has said, guess what, there's some harms down the road. So in the interest of consumer protection, we're just going to put a picture and some text of some of those harms down the road, bring that into the here and now so you can sort of make a more informed decision as a consumer. So we borrow from that model, and studies show that, that it's effective all over the world. Countries all over the world have these warning labels. And we say, hey, well, we're free to burn fossil fuels, but there's a lot of harms down the road that we experience through that. For example, extinction of species, ocean acidification, drought and famine. Let's bring those consequences into the here and now. Let's actually put that right on a gas pump nozzle. So right when you gas up, oftentimes there's little advertisements right on the gas pump nozzle, sort of a 3-inch by 3-inch square right when you're holding the nozzle. We say, let's put that warning label there. We think it'll then be a catalyst for change. So people will still finish filling up their tank, but in that moment, we will have created a sense of dissatisfaction in the marketplace with that prevailing solution to meet our mobility needs. If you can sort of make people feel connected to this problem a little bit more, make them feel a little dissatisfied with it, you then sort of create this unmet market need, you stimulate demand for alternatives, you'll then see businesses and governments respond to that market shift. So businesses will deliver more fuel-efficient vehicles, for example, maybe even alternatives that run on other forms of energy. On the political side of things, you might see politicians more interested in funding public transit, providing bike lanes, maybe senior levels of government might even consider, say, a carbon tax. It's all about just making us feel more connected to this otherwise sometimes abstract problem, that will then sort of make us more interested in meaningful approaches to climate change. So you can think of it as a catalyst for change.
You know, it sounds like a great idea, but what I was wondering about was the response of obviously the petroleum manufacturers and also the car companies. What sort of responses do you get from them?
Well, it's funny. Sometimes when people do a little news media report on us, they then go to a lot of these big fossil fuel companies for comment, and it's always, you know, no comment, right? I've actually heard from someone who has some connections to some executives, oil executives in Calgary, who said, hey, have you heard of this little organization that started this interesting campaign? And apparently they have, and apparently, from what I understand, I think industry is actually a little anxious about this one, because how this is unique from other approaches is it's a demand side approach. So we engage, as you observed, a large segment of the population on a regular basis. Every week you go gas up, you're exposed to this image. And there's a lot of other approaches that sort of they go to the point of extraction. So maybe it's the tar sands, or maybe it's drilling in the Arctic, or they'll fight against pipelines. But as long as you know you're focused up sort of the value chain, if you're looking at those points and not addressing the demand side of the equation, as long as we're still sort of thirsty for fossil fuels, it's hard to then address the tar sands and drilling, offshore drilling and pipelines in meaningful ways. So it's important to engage the demand part of the equation. And then as you point out, say auto manufacturers, we haven't heard too much from them, but it's amazing. Just the basic economic idea that the value of a commodity is largely derived from its uses. So we say, you know, let's look at how we use this product. So we use it in cars, for example, and other, you know, we make plastics out of it. You see it used in aviation. And we engage, you know, the use. If you can engage, you know, that part, if you think about it, without cars burning gasoline and planes and plastics, oil would just be sort of this useless goo in the ground. So we're sort of engaging this part of the equation. We haven't heard from auto manufacturers, but it's interesting just for your listeners to know, you know, the Ford Model T, which came out in 1908, got between 6 and 9 kilometers per liter. You know, fast forward over a century later, cars on the road today actually aren't getting much better. A typical vehicle might still get 6 to 9 kilometers per liter. I'm leasing a smart car, so a more fuel-efficient vehicle, that gets about 15 kilometers per liter, say. The amazing thing is Shell actually hosts a competition every year where they invite high school students and university students to design the most fuel-efficient vehicle they can. The vehicle that won the European gasoline prototype competition in 2013 got just under 3,000 kilometers per liter. So it's unbelievable. Mind you, that's at the extreme end of efficiency, so these things are very low to the ground and aerodynamic and light. But the idea is we actually can do a lot better. There's room for improvement. And I think, you know, if you can shake people out of their sense of complacency, if you can engage, you know, consumers, if you can shift consumer demand, businesses will then develop, you know, products to sell to meet that change in market demand. And the reality is, for auto manufacturers that don't, you're going to see new market entrants. You're going to see you know, companies come up to create the mobility solutions of tomorrow that then, you know, they'll actually get a greater market share. And you see market shifts like that happen in the past, just sort of an ecosystems approach in the marketplace to change. And a prerequisite for that is just stimulating market demand.
So what about the general, I'm going to use that consumer word. It's not a word I like, but that's a word that we tend to get used when you're talking about, you know, the average person in the street. Have you done surveys of how they would respond? I'm thinking of, we'll talk a little bit about your cross-country tour in a few seconds, but surveying people, you know, perhaps, you know, through a polling company to get their impression of how they would feel about this.
Yeah, great question. So I'll tell you what we have done. We've now presented this idea to thousands of people. We've been at, you know, the Green Living Show, all sorts of outdoor festivals where we've got actually a gas pump, a nozzle identical to the ones you'd see at gas stations, with some warning labels on them. And what we do is we hand them to people and we say, this is what it might look like. And it's amazing to see this instant look, you know, in people's eyes, and people say, whoa, yeah, I actually, I get this. You know, people actually really feel connected to the thing. And so I think after seeing that over and over and over, while we haven't conducted, you know, a huge, huge study, polling, that sort of a thing, quite frankly, we're just a small organization, so we don't have the resources to do that. If we did, then we certainly would. But what I can tell you, after introducing this concept to thousands of people, I have no doubt that it'll sort of create that dissatisfaction in the marketplace that'll then engender, you know, a market shift. Even when I've been lobbying counselors in Toronto and in other municipalities, I can recall handing it to some counselors in Toronto, and they instantly got it, and they thought, wow, this is something important. This is something we need. One counselor in Toronto said, you know, we do this with tobacco packaging, which is a significant public health hazard. He said, this is the biggest public health hazard in the history of hazards. Why wouldn't we do it with this? He sort of called it a no-brainer. And the funny thing is, he's from the school of, you know, being concerned about how municipality spends its finances. And if cities are on the hook for billions of dollars worth of adaptation expenses due to climate change, we're just asking cities to print, you know, a few stickers, pennies a sticker. Gasoline retailers can be actually made to pick up that cost. So if we're going to be on the hook as taxpayers collectively for billions of dollars worth of adaptation measures, why not spend a few pennies on a couple of stickers, is our thinking. It'd sort of be almost financially imprudent not to. So
it's certainly a very you know, thought provoking idea. I mean, I can only imagine that the petrol companies are gonna hate it, the petroleum manufacturers. But at the same time, that, you know, that was the response that the tobacco companies had, and obviously this campaign is very much modeled on that. The interesting thing about it is that you're working through the municipalities, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, because that's the only piece of the puzzle I don't really get. Apparently, that the municipalities can do they license the gas stations anyway so they can make them put these stickers on? Is that the way that would work?
Exactly. So that's the tool that we're going to be using. So cities have broad powers with respect to passing bylaws, with respect to, you know, consumer protection, health and well-being, environmental protection, licensing even. And so our approach is to draw on these general sort of health and welfare powers and this particular licensing power. And the idea is, you know, businesses in cities need licenses to operate. There's often a variety of conditions attached onto those licenses. This would just be a new condition for a gasoline retailer's ability to maintain their license. And so a municipality can just pass that by way of passing a simple bylaw. And so a lot of cities do license gasoline retailers already. For those that don't, they nevertheless, under the Municipal Act, have the legal authority to do that. And that approach is informed by, there's a few interesting examples in Canada's legislative history of where a municipality innovates, does something new. Then next thing you know, another municipality copies it, and another one, and another one. Then the province might pick up on it and make it apply province-wide to sort of create a province-wide law. That's actually how the pesticide ban started. Now something like 80% of Canadians live in a community where you can't use cosmetic pesticides on your lawn. That decision can be traced back to, it was a municipal council in Hudson, Quebec, a community of 5,000 people. Just three councillors passed that idea into law. So it's a real grassroots, bottom-up approach to change. And I think, you know, the strategy is largely informed by, the reality is at the federal level of government, we don't see much action on climate change. And I'm sort of at the point in my thinking where I don't think any party, you know, certainly some parties might be more agreeable on the issue, but I'm not sure any of them will take us sort of where we need to go. You do see some leadership at the provincial level now and again, but I think it's going to take a bottom-up approach. It's a different ballgame altogether at the municipal level. There's 4,000 municipalities from coast to coast. Some of them just have, you know, maybe five members. It would take just three councillors to pass this into law. So that's what the tour is about. We're going from coast to coast, sharing the idea with communities, almost planting seeds, getting local people to then organize, have meetings, do some outreach. And the idea is, another beautiful thing about going the municipal route, is we're aiming to pack city and town halls with youth, basically taking the microphone to speak to this issue. Because, of course, at the municipal level of government, if there's an item on a committee's agenda, that you as a citizen want to speak to, you could just sign up to do that and talk for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. You can't really do that at other levels of governments. So that's why we're doing a schools tour, sharing this information with students, and then they're organizing locally, bringing eventually a critical mass of people to municipalities. So councillors then, when they're voting on this bylaw, they're going to do so after hearing from a 13-year-old, then a 16-year-old, then a 21-year-old, then a 19-year-old, and so on. And it's important that councillors hear from that demographic, because it is decisions that we make today that really will shape their future. So that's an important piece of why we're using this municipal route to change.
So have you had any municipalities actually discuss this at council yet? I mean, can you give us some information on where that stands?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a community in British Columbia, North Saanich, a small municipality there, a citizen actually heard me do an interview on the radio. It was in Vancouver, and then they brought it forward to their council for debate. It was just him. He didn't have sort of all the information. There's a lot of interesting economic theory and psychology to the idea, but he brought it forward, and it was just him in the room. They actually voted against it. It was 4 no's, 3 yeses. So a narrow loss, but I realized, you know what, we need to do this outreach piece so that people don't just bring the idea into council alone. They sort of go with supporters. So that was, that example is what's informing our current campaign. And I can tell you that throughout Southern Ontario, there are communities that have been contacted about this by citizens. So if, as a citizen, you're interested in this idea, you could just go to our website at ourhorizon.org and plug in your province, then your city or town, plug in your name or an email, and that gets sent to your councillors. So a lot of councillors know about this. We've been contacted by them. I'm a little bit behind on issuing a report, but there's a lot of councillors that are waiting for this report that basically explores the whole issue, some of the legal case law that that supports it, and so on. So I think this idea is going to be under active consideration in municipalities across Canada soon. And I can also let you know that in British Columbia, we already have people on the ground organizing there. So I think, you know, it could be at some point early next year, maybe, when you're going to see councils coast to coast actively debating this, and you're going to see it passed in communities across Canada. Because the tobacco warning labels exist all over the world, we've actually been contacted by people all over the world. So they have these warning labels in Australia, you know, in Brazil, in all sorts of places. The idea is to set some precedents here in Canada so that then people that we're going to empower with this idea in other parts of the world can also advocate it. And everything on our website, we're not going to claim any intellectual property to anything. This report that I'm going to release soon is going to be released under a Creative Commons license. So if you're in Brazil, you know, take everything you want, translate it to Portuguese, and then point to Canadian leadership so you can then start doing this campaign in your own country. So we actually do see this going global, and I do think this will be one of many important tools that can help shift us to where we need to go.
You know, Rob, it sounds like a great idea. I want to wish you all the best. I want to get you just give out the email, the email address and the web address if people want to get in touch with you. I know you've done 2 meetings in Guelph, one at the university, one downtown. Hopefully we'll be seeing somebody bringing it to council in Guelph and then across the rest of Ontario.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you very much. So the website is www.ourhorizon.org, ourhorizon.org. And you can actually reach me via email at robert@ourhorizon.org. And you're right, there are people in Guelph now that really like the idea. They heard the talk. They're going to be beginning to organize locally, so that eventually we'll bring it forward at Guelph Council as well. Thank you.
That's great. Well, thanks for spending the time to talk to us today, Rob. We'll leave you with a little bit of James Gordon from the album Coyote's Calling and Gotta Get Off the Oil. You're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box, CFIU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Thanks again.
Thank you.